international detective dragons from outer space.
Welcome, or welcome back to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. I'm Anum 5, and thank you very much for downloading and listening to episode 41. The topics for this episode are
transhumanism and idiosyncrasies.
In this episode, we will hear from Mr. T, James, Derek, Mick Bradley, Randy Silverwind, Kurt the Camera Guy, Sarah, and Cumulus the Nimblest. We'll also have a welcome to the forums. There's gonna be plenty, so please continue to listen even after you've heard this.
But who the deuce is the Superman?
Oh, the latest fashion among the life force fanatics. The Superman is as old as Prometheus, and the 20th century will run after this newest of the old crazes. When it gets tired of the world, the flesh, and your humble servant.
Superman is a good cry.
A good cry is half the battle.
Steve Austin, astronaut. A man barely alive.
Gentlemen, we can rebuild him. We have the technology. We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Steve Austin will be that man. Better than he was before. Better, stronger, faster.
Oh, you can thank Mark Twain. Thank Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens, for not having this show a day earlier than you normally would have. It's his fault. It's not my fault, it's his fault. He wrote the damn thing. What damn thing? What is man? Yes, little collection of essays by Mark Twain called What is Man? If you haven't read it, oh, you should. Well, never mind, should. There's a whole bunch of things you should do. There's a whole bunch of things I should do, and I probably never am going to do. There's plenty of things I should see, should read. Maybe if I had a lifespan of, say, 200 to 300 years, I'd be able to do all those things that I should. Well, that's a consideration, isn't it? If you add up all the shoulds, what you're supposed to do, how many glasses of water you're supposed to drink in a day, how many pieces of vegetables and how many pieces of fruit you're supposed to eat. You should be walking around with a basket on your arm and a tank on your back in order to fulfill all those minimum daily requirements that everybody has for you about what you're supposed to do. You have to get a minimum of 8 hours sleep. You have to brush your teeth 14 to 15 times a day. Well, wait a minute. Let's see. If you're supposed to eat 8 pieces of fruit or vegetables, mixing them up, let's say. Well, that means that you're going to have to brush your teeth 8 times a day, at the very least, after each thing that you've eaten. And, of course, you're going to have to get 8 hours sleep, so you better get to bed nice and early. So whatever amount of time you had set aside for yourself, let's say you work an 8-hour day. Well, That leaves you 8 hours of leisure time for yourself, unless, of course, you spend 2 or 3 hours of that 8-hour day work day getting to work and getting back home from work. Then, of course, you got to take time out for eating all those pieces of fruits and vegetables and all that brushing of teeth. You're gonna have to take some time aside, of course, for personal hygiene, for washing. Then cooking, you got to take some time out of that 8 hours for cooking whatever meal you're going to eat. Then take some time out of that eight hours for washing up after what you've cooked. You know, doing all the pots and pans. At some point, averaging out over the course of a week, if you got to do your own laundry and you don't have a washing machine and dryer on the premises, quite a few people are in that position. I know that until we moved into this house, Mrs. Adam 5 and I had to go to a laundromat to do the laundry. So you got to average out some more time taken out of the eight hours. I think maybe you'll get 2, maybe 3 minutes of personal time in that situation. And then, of course, there's the 8 hours for sleep. All right, I've reached one of those points. Sorry, I have done the equivalent of gotten on a bike and just started pedaling while putting a blindfold on, and I just kept pedaling and pedaling and pedaling. And then I stopped, I coasted to a halt, took the blindfold off, and I have no idea how I got here or where I started. It had something to do with Mark Twain. Ah, okay. Just retraced it. Here we go. What is Man? Book you should read, but no, actually, you shouldn't unless you want to. That's what it was. Things we should do. How much time we'd have left for ourselves if we actually did all the things we should do. Whew. Am I in a mood? I seem to be in a mood. You know why? I'll tell you why. It's Tuesday afternoon. Yes, Tuesday afternoon. Not Tuesday evening. I'm at home. This is not a dire circumstance. It is what is known as a temporary layoff. Meaning that I am to return to work, I am told, on July 2nd. So there's some free time involved here. Considerably more than I'm used to having. So it's kind of overloaded my brain a bit. And yes, I am in a mood. You would think that with all that free time, I'd be able to get episode 41 out quicker, faster, cleaner. But no. All right, so anyway, what am I going to do? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take What is Man, the text file of the Mark Twain collection of essays, which I was going into because of a dialogue, a philosophical dialogue that takes place between characters that he has labeled young man and old man, which treats on the property of the human being as a machine and also negates all possibility of free will and altruism, basically taking the whole concept of the emergent property, the spiritual and human emergent property of we as individual beings, not just biological sacks of meat, takes that and drop kicks it out the window. A couple of flaws in his logic, I suppose. I don't know. That's probably a topic for an entire episode. Is there such a thing as altruism? The virtue of selfishness, which I remember mentally flashing on for an instant when I was talking to Nev and Sarah in Skype chat one. Yeah, that's a topic all by itself, but I'm going to take that text. I'm going to take What is Man? I'm just going to make it as a link. I'm just going to gather it up, put it as a link in the Gudikatinkatongatungs. And I'm also going to make a link to software. A software called YBook. That's the letter Y followed immediately by the word book. And it's put out by SpaceJock.com, www.spacejock.com. It's just a program that loads up whatever text file you feed to it and turns it into the closest near equivalent to a paperback book laid open on your desktop that you can page through and read as if it were a book instead of doing the old squinting at black text on white, glaring white background. It sets the type onto somewhat darker, parchmenty type paper of varying shades you get to select. It's just a nice piece of software, and it's free. And it's excellent. I've been using it for years. And it's the reason why this show is a day later than it normally should come out. And, well, what day should it come out? Should it come out last week, for all that? I'm late with the whole shebang. But I got into reading What Is Man all over again. I went through the whole thing and just sat there reading and turning the pages. It's just fascinating stuff. All right. So, wow, that was long.
Your attention, please. Congratulations to Mr. T. You are going to kick cinematic butt. Well done.
Thank you. Yes, congratulations are indeed owed to Mr. T. Well done. Excellent. Super. What does it mean? Well, let's start with this email that I got, and that'll pretty much tell the story. This is from, of course, the Norwegian Viking, Mr. T, and the title is
And the Mad Wizard Scores. Hello, Annam. Don't have much to supplement for the topics on the table right now, but I still thought I would give you an update. Great fun to listen to you, Sarah and Nev, over the Skype chat. Good to hear they are doing okay. Hosting the Casimir arrived in the mail a few days ago, and I was delighted to find Thank You for Reading, C.E. Sales, inside the cover. Brilliant. Now, as soon as I find some time to breathe, I will read it as well. You see, I have to arrange with moving. I am moving from the capital, Oslo, to a small town called Lillehammer.
Is that how it's pronounced? Lillehammer? Is it Lillehammer or Lillehammer? Let's call it Lillehammer.
Yes, this is the town the Winter Olympics 1994 was held. Why, you ask? Well, I rolled a critical hit. In 3 years' time, I will be finished with my bachelor degree at Lillehammer Film School and will have the professional title Production Designer for Film and TV. Yes, I got in. Woohoo! The death card was the right card.
That, Mr. T, is excellent beyond my capacity for speech. You rock.
My only regret is that I have to leave my girlfriend behind for a year. She has 1 year left of her education here in Oslo. But where there is a will and great love, there is always a way. Luckily, the towns are only a 2-hour drive apart.
A 2-hour drive apart? You're not going to be leaving her behind for a whole year. I mean, it may not be an easy drive, but 2 hours is certainly better than like having to be across country or something like that. There's folks that carry on relationships, yes, romantic relationships, on opposite coasts, and sometimes for longer than a year. So I think you guys will do just fine.
I have champagne and shrimp for everyone at the Stratospheric Veranda. And since I'm allergic to shrimp, I'll settle with the drinks. Cheers. I hope everything is going well with you, and I hope you'll get some positive news soon. Or at least get permission to open Schrodinger's box to see if the cat is dead or not. Best of days. A happy Mr. T.
And well, you should be. Very excellent. Good deal. That's very good to hear. Congratulations. And if you would please, when you design your first major film production, please try and make sure that somewhere in the set, our forum icons, our little faces, our forum icons, appear in the film somewhere, as framed pictures on the wall, as product ads going by on buses, somehow, some way. Please be sure that International Detective Dragons from Outer Space figures very prominently in the film, regardless of what the director's intent is or what the subject matter of the film is. I'm kidding, of course, but it's fun to dream. No, that's excellent. That's very well done. I figured I'd read that off first, but I think also what I've got to do here is welcome and thank Big Jack Brass to the forums. Last week, we were very happy to welcome Big Jack to the Frapper Map because he placed his pin, and I'm trying to figure a way to maybe send some refrigerator magnets, some of those clear plastic-cased magnets that I recommended making as holiday gifts in some episode past. If I could send him a whole bunch of those, then he could at least make use of that giant pin running down through the middle of his house. He could, you know, put little refrigerator magnets on it and hang up notes. Yeah, well, when I thought about it in my head, it was funny. Saying it out loud, it, you know, it sounded like crap. All right, I'll just move on. But welcome very much indeed, and thank you, Big Jack Brass, to the forums. What are we going to do here next? What am I going to do here next? I am going to jump to a break in which there will be some kind of weird, odd, either old-time radio or old recording or some such thing that may or may not have to do with transhumanism or idiosyncrasies. And then after that, we're going to hear from James. Back in a bit.
There is something unnatural about these fellows, and do not listen to their gospel, Commander. It is dangerous. Beware of the pursuit of the superhuman. It leads to an indiscriminate contempt for the human. To a man, horses and cats and dogs are a mere species outside the moral world. To the Superman, men and women are a mere species, too. Also outside the moral world. Now, this Don Juan was kind to women and courteous to men. As your daughter here was kind to her pet cats and dogs. But such kindness is a denial of the exclusively human character of the soul.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the 10-hour gate. All those moments will be lost in time, like tears in rain. Time to die.
Now, I lied with my face. I didn't intend to, I just forgot. This is what I wanted to do first, and that was read off the Wikipedia one sentence, don't panic, one sentence definition of transhumanism. It's a long sentence, but it kind of covers it all, really.
Transhumanism is an international, intellectual, and cultural movement supporting the use of new sciences and technologies to enhance human mental and physical abilities and aptitudes and ameliorate what it regards as undesirable and unnecessary aspects of the human condition, such as stupidity, suffering, disease, aging, and involuntary death.
Gee, is that enough? How much more could we talk about? How much more could we talk about transhumanism, except to say that it's not a new idea, but it's certainly something that's becoming realistically attainable. Now, I could go ahead and grab a whole bunch of different stories from a whole bunch of different places, and try commenting on just what I read. But the truth of the matter is, I've got so much email input for this episode that if it doesn't explore fully the aspects of it, it at least touches on a lot of them, and they're well expressed, that I'm going to go ahead and just stick with the emails that were sent in and just read those and direct you to, I will post again the link to transhumanism on Wikipedia, direct you to explore that and the links that lead from it as you desire, going in whatever direction you want to, because obviously just from hearing that one sentence, the number of different ways this could split off would take half an hour to list just as it is. But I did want to get that definition in there. I didn't actually go and look up a definition of idiosyncrasies. I don't really believe that's all that necessary. It's a pretty common word and pretty commonly known. And the only thing that would make it interesting beyond a Merriam-Webster read-off of the definition would be what your idiosyncrasies are. And again, that's still open for you to write in if you feel like it, if it's something that you actually want read on the internet. But the idiosyncrasies, the only idiosyncrasies I think that would be interesting to us would be the ones that we write in to tell each other about ourselves. And maybe you want to do that, maybe you don't. But transhumanism, I did believe, needed some kind of a definition, even a cursory one. Now, with that said, I will begin with this email sent in by James. The subject line reads,
"Transhumanism, Habits, and Genetic Transmogrification Through Ray Guns."
And James writes,
"Hi again, Anum. Yes, Broadsword is available at RPG Now, and it is a new product."
Ah, yes, last episode, in Skype Chat 1, I believe, I made mention of the PDF file that James was nice enough to send along to me, and I did go looking for it at RPG Now and mentioned in that episode. Oh, no, it was in episode 40. Whatever. It was just, let me read this. Just read the letter, Adam. It explains everything. Why do you have to stop? Just read the letter.
Deep 7 had a delay in getting it uploaded to the service, so it's there now if anyone wants to grab it.
You see how simple that was? Man, my shows could be like 20 minutes long if I just shut up. All right. Enough attitude. I don't care that it's Tuesday afternoon. I don't care that I'm home when normally I would be at work. I don't care. Are you lying, Adam? Yes, I'm lying. My throat's all parched. Gargling with cold coffee doesn't cut it. Well, what can you do about it? Well, I can finish reading the letter. All right, then. Go ahead. I will. Who are you talking to? Nobody. Then why are you turning your head back and forth? For comic effect. But nobody can see that on the podcast. I understand that. Boy, if this doesn't get edited out, I don't know. Oh, yeah, a letter from James. Let's continue.
It is also available.
It. You know, if you had read the letter from the very beginning, that word, it, would make a hell of a lot more sense. But now you have to stop and you have to explain that it means Broadsword, the PDF, the game. All right. Broadsword, the PDF, the game,
is also available through Precis Intermedia Gaming.
And there is a link here, which of course I will include in the Kutikatingatungatungs.
But the Ray Gun is so much cooler than PDF files. Sure, it won't work, but it looks awesome. Yeah, I'm a sucker for style over substance.
And if you don't know what he means by that, then you're a new listener. And hi, thank you. Thank you for downloading. Stick around. You should enjoy it. I hope you'll enjoy it. But listen to episode 40 if you're really curious about that. It has to do with ray guns and special effects shops and things like that. And $690, which I don't think any of us have.
And yes, I know I tend to be blunt and don't mince words. It's not engendered me to many people, but at least I know I'm being true to myself. I'm opinionated, bitter, and partially antisocial. At least you guys can laugh at me and just accept that that's how I am. It keeps me grounded when I can ridicule myself or be ribbed by others. I'm not a total ego case.
I don't know that anybody's laughing at you. If anything, it's kind of that nervous grin when somebody else says something that we wish we'd said ourselves. All right, maybe that's just me, but all right, anyway, moving on.
So I guess it's time for me to speak my mind on transhumanism. And I apologize for the long email you're about to get, partially because it's such a broad topic, and partially because I ramble, and I know it.
That's funny, it's like George Bernard Shaw. I'm sorry I'm going to have to write you a long letter because I didn't have time to write a short one. That makes a hell of a lot more sense than you think, particularly particularly when I'm reading it, but...
First of all, I hate the term post-humanism.
Well, you and Ray Kurzweil. Kurzweil apparently doesn't like that term either. He objects to it.
First of all, I hate the term post-human, much in the same way that while I was getting my art degree, the term post-modern. You are human. Outside of major genetic mutation, modification, you are still human. Homo superior is better left up to the X-Men and comics. Even if I was modified with increased brain thought speed or injected with phosphorescent jellyfish DNA so that I could glow under fluorescent light, I'd still be human. Perhaps I'd be slightly better or weirder than those around me, but I'm still human. Transhumanism is not evolution. It is artificial evolution. And there is danger in that. As much as I'm in favor of the idea of improving our species, it should occur naturally. Can you imagine the poor sods who get evolution version 1.0 only to be totally screwed when the bigger, better evolution version 2.0 comes out, and there's no upgrade without significant danger of mutation or cellular rejection? We're already fragmented enough across racial, cultural, and economic lines. Do we really need to be divided genetically as well? Talk about Darwinism on speed. Obsolescence of genetic strains in centuries, perhaps years, rather than millennia.
Oh, this is proof. Sorry, taking a departure here, but this is just proof that we're not covering any new ground here, folks. This has all been talked about, thought about, and made into movies before. Let's just grab one example, probably the most prevalent and pertinent example that applies to transhumanism as probably as we're looking at it now, and that is Blade Runner. And in a situation like that, we're looking at life forms that are not only transhuman, but patented. Well, at any rate, he continues.
With that said, I'm personally in favor of research into nanotech, genetic modification, and cybernetics. The benefits outweigh the risks, in my opinion. The problem comes with the irresponsible use of this knowledge.
And that's where pretty much all the problems from advanced knowledge and scientific advancement comes from. That ever-present two-edged sword.
A good analogy is the massive numbers of prescriptions for psychotropic drugs, especially in regards to attention deficit disorder. I'm firmly convinced that most children really don't need to be on these things, and yet we see more and more parents and physicians putting kids on these pills. Are these short attention spans and hyperactivity really a medical problem, or is it a parenting problem? Anyway, as I said, I think that human modification will be necessary, especially as we expand off of Earth and into space, where the problems of muscular degeneration and other physiological effects are well known. Creating treatments or individuals suited to withstand such environments as deep space or the atmospheres of other planets will be a benefit, but they're still human. The same can be said that if overpopulation continues to be a problem and we need to move to oceanic habitation, people adapted to high pressure and or able to acquire oxygen through gills would be beneficial.
I don't know that the gills will be necessary. Something to do with oxygen transfer, enhanced oxygen transfer to red blood cells using nanotechnology. That's something that's touched on briefly, at least in one of the talks that Raymond Kurzweil. I followed a lot of the links to some audio and some video of Ray Kurzweil, the futurist. Futurist? What would you call him? Would you call him a futurist? Well, he's a Nobel Prize winner, I'm pretty sure. I'm going to put those links in the Kutikinikinagatungs. Please do check out the IDDFOS homepage. I know I mention repeatedly identifying International Detective Dragons from Outer Space and www.anim5.com and spelling it out all the time. What I haven't been realizing, I think, is that if you're listening to this MP3, I'm coming upon a revelation for myself here that I'm going to share with you all, something that you've known about probably since episode one. If you're listening to this MP3 on an iPod, I put the website and the name of the show right there in the title tag, and all the information that has to do with the MP3 is right there in the MP3 tag. And if you're listening to it on a PC, same thing. It's displaying the website. So I have to wonder, why am I so carefully, repeatedly telling everyone www.anim5.com, when all you got to do is look at the little gray window of whatever it is you're playing this on? But anyway, yes, Ray Kurzweil, extremely interesting insights and predictions about how far and how fast we are going to go very soon because of the geometric progression of invention, because of the speed at which one innovation follows on another and improves on another, so that it's almost like a rock dropped off the top of a building. It just keeps falling faster and faster. Even that's not accurate. That's not a geometric progression of speed. But anyway, yes, how did I get on that? Well, it was the oxygen gills thing. Okay, let's return to the letter. Okay.
It's an interesting concept in that, typically, human beings have adapted their environment to their needs, and now the thinking seems to be vice versa. And while certain aspects of transhumanism appeal to me, I ultimately think that it is a dangerous path best trod lightly. I also recognize in myself some of the common traits exhibited by transhumanists. Atheism, a desire to improve the species and an elimination of suffering, but I also chafe at some of its other concepts, such as immortality and the substitution of the machine for biology. I don't want to live forever. And as much as I like machines, the dehumanizing effect could be a serious danger to humanity. Along these same lines, if we start differing too much genetically, do we not also run the risk of not being able to reproduce?
As far as the dehumanizing effect of becoming more machine-like goes, I'd urge you even more strongly to read What Is Man as soon as you can. The dialogue comes at the very top of the collection, so you don't have to go hunting for it. But anyway, don't want to live forever? I don't know. To quote Pratchett, ask me again in 500 years.
I like the idea of mind uploading, but only to the extent as a repository of information, not as immortality. The idea of existing as a disembodied intelligence is a bit queasy for me, much like the old brain in a jar you'll see in bad sci-fi films and Golden Age comics. Now, hey, if you want to use my brain as a massive Google to preserve human knowledge and experience, I'm okay with that. After all, what do I need with that when I die? Would I enjoy being young forever? Hell yes. I've seen what happens to you as you age, and I'd rather not experience the adult diaper years when I can't remember things or think for myself. But I'm selfish. I want to look and feel young, up until it's my biological time to go, and then just check out. I have no desire to live forever. Talk about a population nightmare.
Well, that touches on one of the aspects of the whole transhumanist thing. When you talk about all this biological improvement or human enhancement or genetic manipulation, is it the wealthy and the powerful that are going to get all these enhancements, including improved longevity, improved personal health, the reversal or the complete halting of the aging process, and their progeny genetically engineered to be even better than that? Is there going to be a social class of superior human beings simply because they can afford it? This is not something that I would expect to see making it all across planet Earth to every living human. Not by a long shot. Not even in several generations. Not even when it becomes cheap. And so if you're talking about, let's increase everybody's lifespan by eliminating the aging process and all these other diseases, no more involuntary death, a population nightmare? You ain't kidding. Maybe the trade-off would have to be, I don't even know what the trade-offs beg a whole list of questions. I wonder if we shouldn't extend this into 42. Oh, well, anyway, back to James.
I guess the long and short of it is that I am in favor of enhancing our species through whatever methods seem viable. I am not in favor of being beyond human, which just smacks of elitism and moral superiority. True, I typically disdain most people I interact with, the general population, but that's because I'm a misanthrope, more than anything else. I don't place any faith in religion, so the soul, or playing God, doesn't factor into it. Perhaps I'm pessimistic about the governments or corporations who would control this technology, and you can bet your bottom dollar they would. Look at some of the legal battles that have already happened over the human genome. As much as I am in favor of democracy and the free market, I don't think anyone needs to control the fundamental makeup or ownership of our bodies. And at this point, I think I may have completely jumped the tracks on this particular discussion, so I'm going to stop. I'm sure that others will give you more insight into this and phrase it considerably better.
Well, I don't know that they'll phrase it any better. I mean, you're pretty much jumping into the questions that this whole topic was meant to bring up. So, hey, what the hell?
As for idiosyncrasies, and these may be more habits than idiosyncrasies, I've only got two that I'm aware of. If I've got others, nobody's ever pointed them out. I twirl my mustache when I'm bored or in really deep thought. I try to keep the thing trimmed down so I don't do it, but eventually I won't do it for a week or so due to either laziness or lack of time, and I rush to get out the door in the morning, and I find myself twisting it around again and again like a villain from some bad early silent film with a top hat, cape, and a woman tied to a railroad track. I also have the habit of keeping my fingers moving. If I'm not drumming a pencil, playing with a paperclip, or twisting a rubber band around my fingers, I unconsciously start looking for something to pick up and fiddle with. Well, I guess I'm just boring when it comes to idiosyncrasies.
Well, you know, I wasn't expecting anything like, you know, outrageously super wild. Like, my idiosyncrasy is that whenever I board a bus, I blow a trumpet very loudly and pitch a softball down the center of the bus to the back. Yeah, that's an idiosyncrasy. It can get you arrested, but I'm glad to hear that that is not the case for you or anyone that I know. What the hell did that have to do with anything? That was our email from James, and thank you very, very much, James, for writing in. We're going to cut to another break. Wait a minute. Oh, I see, yes. I'm sorry, there's another email here from James that is a recommendation for a possible podcast subject, and it is a link to an article involving the cult of the amateur. And you know what? I'm going to leave that. I'm going to put that link, I'm going to put this link in the Gudigatingatongatungs for you to check out, because I think we're going to want to talk about this. It is, it's a link to an article about a book that somebody wrote, somebody who takes issue with the fact that we all, as in you, the internet listener, who selects and listens to the podcasts and reads the articles that you have interests in, and we as podcasters or anybody else that podcasts or blogs or posts information about their particular interest, this person has an issue with that. Doesn't seem to think it's a good thing. But I'll go ahead and post the link. You can go ahead and read the article if you would, and we're probably going to look at that as a possible show topic in the future. I don't think it's going to be 42, but we're definitely going to revisit that. So anyway, thank you, James, also for that link. I'm not going to let myself get derailed on this. I'm just going to recommend that you check out the link, read the article, and you'll be well prepared to perhaps comment on it if you'd care to when we do, in fact, cover that topic. So anyway, another break. When we return, we will hear from Agent Desilu or Derek from Texas. More on transhumanism and idiosyncrasies when we return right after this.
Hull surfaces pitted with meteor scars, however scanners make out a name. SS Botany Bay.
Then you can check the registry.
No such vessel listed. Records of that period are fragmentary, however. The mid-1990s was the era of your last so-called World War.
The eugenics wars.
Of course. Your attempt to improve the race through selective breeding.
Oh, now, wait a minute. Not our attempt, Mr. Spock. A group of ambitious scientists. I'm sure you know the type.
I tell you that as long as I can conceive something better than myself, I cannot be easy unless I am striving to bring it into existence or clearing the way for it. That is the law of my life. That is the working within me of life's incessant aspiration to higher organization, wider, deeper, intenser self-consciousness, and clearer self-understanding.
You know, one of the dangers of having this pop screen right in front of my microphone is that occasionally while I'm recording, I like to light up and enjoy a nice imported Taiwanese cigar. That's a total lie. It's just one of those homemade empty tube injector style cigarettes that I smoke. But I do occasionally like to light up, and if I put it in my mouth the wrong way, I am in grave danger of burning a hole right through this pop screen. That would be the bad news. I've never actually done it. That would be the bad news, though, if it were one of those $60, $20, I don't even know how much those things cost when they're real, when you go ahead and send away to an audio supply house or whatever. How much are those things, anyway? So it's not, that wouldn't be a tragedy. I can make up another one in about, you know, half an hour. But was that just my way of saying, hey, I'm smoking now, so deal with it? That's very unprofessional of me. It's very unprofessional of you, Adam, on a Tuesday afternoon at home recording a podcast when you're supposed to be at work, even though you don't have to be because you've been temporarily laid off. Well, the only reason I have any energy left really is because of that word, temporarily. That I can deal with. Weren't you supposed to be reading a letter from Agent Desilu? Yes, I was. Well then, why don't you proceed? Okay, subject line?
Transhumanism.
That gets us right to the point. And Derek writes,
Annam, it's been a while since I've written in. I can't believe I went this long. But this topic is just too juicy. I recently stumbled upon a picture of a transhuman example. I thought it was a joke at first, but figured it to be useful for the topic at hand, so I include it.
And he has a link here, and that link, of course, will be in the Kodikatingatangatungs.
I also include the Great Wiki's approach to this, because it seems pretty comprehensive and covers a barrage of topics that I won't even touch on in this letter.
Well, you're taking the same approach to your letter that I'm taking to this podcast.
But to kick that article off, the root word is humanism, as in the philosophical movement from the Renaissance. But onto my ideas. I had quite a few thoughts bubbling around in my head when I woke up this morning. It occurred to me that if the practice of scientifically improving the human body started anywhere, it would probably begin in the medical field. In fact, we have it already to some extent. Bypass surgeries, metal alloy attached to bones, dialysis, insulin injections, etc. These all seem like absolutely perfect examples of basic transhumanism modifications. However, to take it one step further into the realm we normally would think about, due to all our science fiction training, think about internal dialysis implants, solid alloy bones, metabolism adjusters, and even whole synthetic organs. What about mental retardation? Gone. And it would originate by some doctor deciding that such and such surgery or procedure wasn't cutting the mustard anymore, so improves on it. The first step is based out of necessity, if not a couple of other things, and as they say, whoever they are, necessity is the mother of invention. From here, I see two possible routes. Let's start with a supposed military tag-along behavior, where some big breakthrough is made and the military contracts it. We're talking super soldier types. Imagine fully implanted flak jackets, increased endurance and stamina through brain and muscle enhancement, specialization implants, or possibly even temporary neuroweb implants that would only adjust one or two things, such as aim accuracy. Imagine mass units of soldiers being fully equipped to handle days of combat, days of patrol without rest or need of food. The best soldiers are machines, after all.
You know what? I am imagining that. But you also have to imagine it coming from the other direction. Every time my brain goes down that route, it doesn't generally come up with positive results. And while I'm certainly all in favor of anything that gives somebody a survival edge, if they're gonna be going out and risking their life anyway, I'm definitely not in favor of permanently changing their physical makeup in order for them to carry out a job, in order for them to fulfill whatever duties they want to fulfill, if it's going to significantly alter who they are personally, permanently, on a physical level. I mean, it already does that psychologically. I don't know, the whole route that could take, as you say, as one of the possible routes, when you follow it to its end conclusion, it's just, it generally improves the possibilities of victory on the side of whoever in whatever particular conflict has the most tech money to spend, and whoever is the least mindful of what effect it has on the individual soldiers themselves. I don't know. It strikes me as more of a horror story than anything else. Maybe it does you too. But to continue.
The second route we might take from medical advancement would be commercial uses. We already have some of that with stomach stapling, plastic surgery, and liposuction. These are modifications to remove the unnecessary and useless parts of our bodies, no? Slimmer, prettier, more tanned, more fit, more tight, more desirable, all of these would be part and parcel of commercial enhancement. And think of the money it would rake in. Here, in a few years, when the cosmetic industry's biggest expenses become more and more common, they will be the biggest sellers. Who needs to diet when you can just suck it out for just as much money? Why go to the gym when you can get a 30-minute procedure to shock your muscles into the perfect shape for years to come? And who needs all that senseless body hair when you can already afford as much clothing as will keep you warm? Completely remove all but the valence hairs from your body to introduce the naturally sleek texture that is approved by the industry. And if it's too cold where you live, simply have wetware installed to heat the blood to a desirable temperature.
You know, that shock procedure treatment was actually sold, and I think is still being sold, as a little gizmo that you can apply to arm, thigh, and abdomen muscles that actually do that. They contract the muscles involuntarily as you sit there, and giving you the equivalent of something like 100 sit-ups or something a day. From what I understand, people that have used it have also felt the soreness, the after effects of feeling the burn after plugging one of these suckers in. So yeah, that's been around for quite a while, actually. I don't know how successful it's been. At any rate, where were we? Yes.
The last example I could think of would be in the entertainment industry. Singers who don't need microphones anymore, or who have constantly perfect pitch. Footballers who don't have to use steroids because they have league-sanctioned muscle replacements and endurance implants. Marathons extended to hundreds of miles as the runners are all equipped with muscles that don't tire and bodies that don't hunger. Days of endless activity, constant motion, constant participation. Climb Everest with your family over the weekend. Hell, make it a day trip. The only thing I'll say regarding the ethics of all this is that humanity has a precious problem. We love ourselves, and we love ourselves to be at our best. I think our desires, at least in capitalist countries, is to be the best in a wide number of fields, on a majority level. That will be the reason we go to these lengths. As far as idiosyncrasies, I think it will even become a part of this. Eventually, when we're more synthetic than human, or when we're being catered to and neighbored by robotic constructs, they will start to put in quirks. What a selling point, hmm? Fumbles and fidgets like a real human. I can even imagine them throwing in my own oddness, such as my need to click my teeth together as I drive past a light pole, or my tapping my fingers together in a 1-3-4-2 pattern against my thumb. I feel like Rain Man. Definitely feel like Rain Man. Best of days, Derek. P.S. Have you seen The Bicentennial Man?
No, actually, I haven't seen The Bicentennial Man, and I haven't read the story. I know the story pretty well, basically because Mrs. Adam Five read it and discussed it a little bit with me, because she's written. No, she hasn't written. She's read everything that Asimov, I'm pretty sure everything that Asimov has written, at least in the fiction area. What about that, huh? Robotic constructs that have built-in idiosyncrasies, like the personality features of the robots in Adam's work.
Why are you lying here face down in the dirt? It is a particularly effective position for being wretched.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Derek. Again, plenty of questions asked and plenty of aspects of this explored. Gonna go to another break, and when we return, we will hear from Mick Bradley. Back in a bit.
And does your demonstration of the approaching sterilization and extinction of mankind...
I never demonstrated...
I never demonstrated the extinction of mankind. Life cannot... Well, its own extinction.
I had not finished when His Excellency interrupted me.
I begin to doubt whether you will ever finish, my friend.
Okay, and back we are. This is just a brief note from Mick Bradley. The subject line is...
A comment... for your next show.
And he writes,
Hi, Adam, it's Mick. What's transhumanism? I don't really know what it is, and so it's hard to give feedback on it. I mean, sure, I'm an interwebs guy. I can look it up and read about it and soak it in, but even then, I don't think I'd really be properly informed about the topic, and one of my idiosyncrasies is that I don't like to hold forth on things about which I'm not properly informed. One of my other idiosyncrasies is that I wish more people had that first idiosyncrasy. But anyway, your friend, Mick Bradley.
Well, that was short and to the point, and I certainly do understand. I don't know how fully informed anyone can be on this. Really, because it's just so incredibly huge a topic. And even in that one-sentence definition that I gave from the Wikipedia, that doesn't really begin to cover... half the questions that you might have about it, even after studying it for days. One of the questions that sprang to mind for me, at least immediately, was, yeah, you're talking about enhancement of the human being. You're talking about using technology to improve what's there, or at least, well, yeah, improve what's there and get rid of what you consider bad in the human being. But what are we talking about? First of all, that begs three questions immediately. One, who decides what would be an improvement? Two, who decides what you consider a flaw and what is bad in the human animal? And three, are we talking about changing the human being as a species with changes that are carried over from generation to generation? Are we talking about an across-the-board, this is what we want to do to improve the human race and we're going to use science to do it? Or are you talking about these are the things we can do with an individual human being using technology to improve that one person and get rid of negative physical attributes of that one person? Or with enough money, this group of people. And those improvements will last as long as this person is alive. So we're talking about, right off the bat, we're talking about two different setups here. We're talking about two different outcomes. One just enhances the life of a laboratory subject, or when the stuff is improved, an outrageously wealthy person that wants microscopic vision and enhanced sonar hearing and perfectly tanned skin and not to age. We've got that. You've got that one scenario. And then in the other, it's, well, this is how we want to alter human beings from now on with a change that will carry over into the next generation through our manipulation of genetic information. And even as I'm saying that, I'm realizing how much truth there is and what Mick wrote there, because my saying all that doesn't mean I fully understand it. But I think we'll also notice as the show progresses, and from what we've heard so far, most people seem to be asking more questions than answering anything to do with this, exploring more possibilities connected with the topic of transhumanism than coming to any particular real conclusions about it. So while I fully understand both idiosyncrasies, well, it'd be a short show. It'd be a short show if we didn't at least discuss it a little bit, but I hear where you're coming from. You do find some people that will hear one sound bite having to do with something like this, like me, when I was listening to the Ray Kurzweil audio and watching the video that I saw. I just zeroed in on that one thing he talked about. Insulin fat receptors in cells and how they could be made inoperative, or rather how they were made inoperative in mice, and the mice therefore ate as much as they wanted, if not more than they normally do, and remained slim and obtained all the health benefits of being slim because the fat was no longer being stored. They weren't getting fat from eating too much, and that was all due to nanotechnology. So yeah, somebody like me will hear something like that and jump on the bandwagon and say, this is great, one of the pharmaceutical companies is going to come out with the super happy drug with just those minor minimal side effects like bleeding from the eyes and, you know, having your head fall off after 6 months. That's the stuff that appears in really tiny print at the bottom of the screen. Anyway, somebody like me jumps on that, grabs on it, and thinks they know all about it and just looks at the intermediate end result and not at the whole picture. There is a danger in that. Where was I going? I rambled out what it was I wanted to say. What are we going to hear next? We're going to hear from, hey, Randy Silverwind writes again. Haven't heard from Randy since he joined the Frapper Map. This is from Randy Silverwind, and the subject line is,
nice big Horkin email for you.
And yeah, it is. So get comfy. Here we go.
Greetings, Adam 5. This might be a tad of a long email, but I won't apologize for that since I know how much you love emails. I figure since I'm actually doing you a favor and I have yet to apologize to someone for holding the door for them, why apologize for a long email that you can read and dissect on your show? And with that stunning rationalization, I shall now ramble on at length with no fear of reprisals or censure.
Okay.
First of all, I'd like to compliment you on a fabulous show. You and your insightful cadre of listeners provide me with plenty of thought-provoking shows to help whittle away the endless hours of driving. As a long-haul trucker, I have lots of time to kill listening to podcasts, and you help kill it beautifully. Hats off.
Oh, another wandering geek. Well, not only are you a long-haul trucker, not only are you a D&D player, or at least used to be a D&D player, but you listen to podcasts. That would mean that you would have to check out The Wandering Geek, the new podcast by Kurt the Camera Guy. Was that smooth or what? How about I get back to the letter? Here we go.
Secondly, I'd like to politely disagree with your statement that having someone serve you demeans the person serving. Plenty of people serve others every day. Waitresses, bellhops, cabbies, hairdressers, customer service reps, etc. Few of these people would consider themselves debased by doing their jobs. And in the specific case you were referring to, with a personal manservant or some such equivalent, I would hazard a guess that such a person would find the thought of his job being degrading even more nonsensical. These people provide a very important function, and as long as they are treated with respect and dignity, can proudly state that they are the servant of an important person. Think of someone such as Beethoven. He had a personal manservant, secretary, who found the position of serving someone of such brilliance a supreme honor, even with the difficulty of living with such a conflicted individual. Of course, there is also the other extreme, such as the famous individuals of today, treating their entourage as beasts of burden, but that is precisely why I put the caveat of treated with respect and dignity in my earlier statement. The relationship between the server and the served must be one of mutual respect and even friendship, or else it would not work. Think of all the times you have done something for Mrs. Annam Five. That would be considered serving her. Treating her to breakfast in bed, doing the dishes when she's had a hard day, or rubbing her neck and shoulders when she has a headache. As long as your efforts are appreciated, you feel good doing such service, do you not? The same case would apply to a maid or manservant, if you were to employ one. As long as you treated them with kindness and respect, they would find serving you to be a duty worth doing. The case that brings all this into an easily digestible nugget for me is the scene between Alfred and his niece in the movie where Batgirl is introduced. I have no idea which movie that was, since they have all sort of blended into one forgettable mass of black capes and overblown stunts. But that scene, where she asks him how he can demean himself to serve another, and he replies that he finds serving Master Bruce not to be demeaning, but honorable. That scene sticks in my mind as to how a true servant-served relationship should be approached. Another point, this one much quicker, is a recommendation of a podcast for you and your listeners. It is called The Traditional Naturopath. I thought of this when you made your statement of hospitals not being a place where true recovery can occur. His views are much as yours on that subject, and I have had my thoughts on Western medicine, especially drugs and their prescriptions, to be changed drastically. Check it out. I think you might enjoy it. Now, I am looking at my notes, and for some reason I marked down to tell you about a book, but for the life of me I can't remember why. It was sparked by something you said in your last podcast, and I can't remember what it is, and I'm currently unable to connect to the internet. Writing this in Notepad to cut and paste in the email later. So I can't go back and check, since iTunes has already deleted the show in question. Does anyone know how to go back through iTunes and re-download a show that you have already listened to and deleted? Well, I see by looking at what I have written that you, my good man, have no monopoly on rambling tangents, so I shall return to my original point. The book I wanted to tell you about was called People of the Kiln.
Actually, the title is Kiln People.
Oh, I remember now. It was that comment you made about people making themselves obsolete by creating machines that could do everything we could. This book deals with a very similar topic, where mankind has created a way to make temporary clones of themselves that they could send out to work or experience life, with the original doing whatever he felt like and either downloading the clone's memories at the end of the day or disposing of it, depending on whether the clone had anything worth downloading. After all, would you really want to download a bad day at the office if you didn't have to? I found it an excellent read, although I cannot remember offhand who wrote it. I think it was David Brin.
That actually is correct. Yes, it was David Brin.
Although I could not swear to it. I'm tremendously bad with names, and the rest of my memory is not that far behind. My last topic in this email is my cosmic roll of the dice story. It is the tale of how my wife and I met. She is the sister of a friend of mine, whom I roomed with off and on over the years, and I met her during my last stint as his roommate. That in itself is not so odd, but here is where it starts getting interesting. I met him through an ex-girlfriend. She brought him to a D&D game that I was involved in during and immediately following high school. She and I had been an item that final year, up until just before the end of the school year, when we sort of agreed to go our separate ways. A month and a half later, she shows up with him at our D&D game, which is the only one she ever came to, if I remember correctly. He and I hit it off, and we have been friends ever since. It gets even better. That was my final year of high school, but it was not my graduation year. I had actually gone back for an extra year to upgrade my marks in a few courses, and take a couple of extra courses that I had not managed to take during my regular run. It was then that I met and began dating my ex that introduced me to my friend, whom later introduced me to his sister when she was over visiting, causing sparks of instant attraction that led to our moving in together 6 months later and conceiving our first of three children a year after that. So, the cosmic roll of the dice, here, was my decision to go back to high school, which I loved, by the way, another reason I went back for an extra year. That led eventually to my meeting the mother of my children and the other half of my soul. It wasn't until you brought up the topic and got me thinking about it that I actually went back and thought about the chain of events that brought me to where I am now. It was a rocky road, with lots of pain, that I wouldn't have chosen to undergo if I'd been given a choice, but I wouldn't change a thing if it meant losing the life I have now. There you go, a massive email that will no doubt send you into paroxysms of joy while reading it upon your fine, fine show.
Thank you, Randy Silverwind.
You're welcome. I shall now return to the fine art of omphaloskepsis, which I hope to master soon. Best of days, Randy Silverwind.
Thank you very much for that big Horkin... What is it? Nice big Horkin email. Excellent. Yes, I ran immediately to Merriam-Webster and looked up omphaloskepsis. And their definition is...
contemplation of one's navel as an aid to meditation.
I learn something new every hour. We're going to go to another break. And after that, we will hear from our final email for this episode, and it is from Kurt the Camera Guy. Back in a bit.
Long before the sterilization which I described becomes more than a clearly foreseen possibility, the reaction will begin. The great central purpose of breeding the race, yes, breeding it to heights now deemed as superhuman. That purpose which is now hidden in a poisonous cloud of love and romance and fastidiousness will break through into clear sunlight as a purpose no longer to be confused with the gratification of personal fancies. The impossible realization of boys' and girls' dreams of bliss.
Now then, what do we hear from the camera guy, the wandering geek? Check out his podcast. Find the link on the IDDFOS homepage. But in the meantime, let's hear this letter, the subject line.
Transhumanism.
Once again, cuts right to the chase. Kurt writes.
Hi, Adam. The concept of transhumanism is both alluring and frightening. The problem is... but I don't think the two can be separated.
Yep, there's that two-edged sword. And he's right.
At its base, transhumanism is the use of technology to alleviate the flaws in the human condition. On a certain level, Western...
Those quotation marks, by the way, were his. I didn't add the emphasis. That was Kurt writing quotation marks there. I'm sorry, I'll continue.
On a certain level, Western medicine is doing that already. Blood pressure medication, replacement heart valves, insulin pumps, and antidepressants are all examples of this that I don't think many people outside of Tom Cruise would disagree with. And I hope that these advances that allow more of the population to live normal lives continues. Where I part with the concept of transhumanism is when the advancement goes beyond helping those with unfortunate medical conditions lead more enjoyable lives and goes toward improving normal, healthy human beings. The same technology that will someday replace an amputee's leg with a fully functional cybernetic replacement might also be used to improve and even replace a healthy set of legs to allow someone to run, jump, or carry more. There just seems to be something fundamentally wrong with that to me. I have heard of people amputating limbs simply for the aesthetics of it. I'm sure we can all agree that these folks are fundamentally unbalanced.
I would guess so, yeah. Entire limbs? People amputating limbs for the aesthetics of it? You know, there's one thing that we're certainly not short of on this podcast, and that is extremes. There are polar extremes, and I guess we generally take a look at the full gamut of them, particularly when we're trying to examine a situation or a story. On the one end, you have the mild, which is a tattoo or an earring. And at the other end of that body adornment thing, at the other extreme end of that spectrum, you have amputating limbs for the aesthetics of it. You know what? I'm going to take your word for it, and please don't send me a link to any proof of this. I believe you.
I don't want to follow the link. I tell you what I have heard of, and probably a lot of other people have heard of it as well, the ancient nobility in China and the very early dynasties, where they would wear those, at least the women, I think, were wearing these shoes that over time would deform their feet so badly that they actually could not walk. And it was a sign that they were of such high-born status that they were not expected to walk anywhere. They would be carried everywhere by their servants. But they would wear these shoes that deformed their feet to guarantee that that was the case. And they would have these horribly deformed feet as a status symbol. God, there's nothing so screwed up that hasn't been done or thought of by the human race one way or another. Yeah, fundamentally unbalanced. Well, it's probably easy for us to draw the line in certain places, but you know what? Sometimes there's gray areas there. Anyway, he writes, he continues.
Though I realize the lure of what are essentially superpowers would be strong, we as a race can't even handle the most rudimentary of human enhancement with the respect it deserves. And no, I'm not talking about the emails we delete every day from our spam folders. The two most common forms of transhumanism available to the masses at this point in time are steroids and plastic surgery, and are constantly abused by a small but significant percentage of the people that use them. And then we have to take into account that these technologies would never be considered basic health care, due to both the expense and the elective nature of them. So there would be a massive gap of the haves and the have-nots with these enhancements.
Yeah, that point has come up earlier. Absolutely.
The powerful become more so. On the other hand, if the federal government forced insurers to cover them, the entire U.S. healthcare system would collapse under the weight of these costs, because who wouldn't want to live as a demigod on Earth?
And U.S. healthcare system. That wouldn't be a very spectacular collapse, because, you know, a cardboard shack can only make so much noise. Oh, did I say that out loud? This is nothing I need to tell Kurt the camera guy about. I'm sure he's more than familiar with the U.S. healthcare system, probably far more than I am. Anyway, he continues.
But the most frightening prospect is when governments begin to use these enhancements in pursuit of their own agendas, when the technologically advanced nations of the world begin creating super soldiers to make up the manpower disparity created by the volunteer nature of their militaries and the comparatively large militaries of some third world countries, since they are some of the few that are well fed and housed.
At independently, we come back to the military application. I guess it's unavoidable when you're talking about enhancement, physical enhancement.
We currently see technology being used as a force multiplier by Western democracies. When there is a greater pressure in the future to do even more with fewer bodies, I could certainly see even the most conservative of governments looking to these medical advancements, along with improvements in weaponry and transport, to help accomplish this. But this is a slippery slope that once you start down, there will be no coming back from. So, from where I stand, I'm all for the use of medical advancement for the alleviation of human suffering, but under no circumstances do I think we should be enhancing anyone, with the one exception of fighting off an alien invasion, should that ever arise. Best of days, camera guy.
Well, obviously, I mean, you know, if you're going to have the, if the BEMs are going to start landing, if the bug-eyed monsters are going to start landing, and we know about it, well, obviously, we're going to try and enhance everybody so that we can fight. That's a given. I think actually that's one of the checkboxes on most political polls these days. How badly can I fail at being facetious? Probably pretty badly. Maybe there's an enhancement for that. Oh, what am I going to do now? Well, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to say thank you very much, Kurt the camera guy, for writing in. I hate forgetting to do that. I go through reading a whole letter, make a comment about it, and forget entirely to thank the person that wrote. Well, I didn't forget this time. Hope I didn't forget any of the other times. We'll have to go back and listen. But anyway, yes, thank you, Kurt the Gamer Guy. And I'm probably going to have one or two comments about some of the stuff that was covered in this. But we're going to go to another break. We're going to present the, give some comments. We're going to present the old-time radio show for this week. And, well, I think you know the drill. That's what the structure of the show is, and it's got to follow that structure. And shut up, Adam. Go to the break already, please. Thank you.
Truth is stranger than fiction. This is the proof. This is Ripley's. Believe it or not. When Kit Carson, the famous scout, was a boy of 17 in Franklin, Missouri, he ran away from the saddle maker to whom he was apprenticed. And the official reward for his recapture was 1 cent. Believe it or not. In a moment, I'll tell you about the reward given to a thrifty nephew.
What if he's a worker's man, says the poet. Yes, but what a blunderer. Here is the highest miracle of organization yet attained by life. The most intensely alive thing that exists. The most conscious of all the organisms. And yet, how wretched are his brains.
Thurston Manor and its vast estate in Scotland was to be willed by Mrs. Agnes Hunter, a widow, to one of her 3 nephews, who she invited to come visit her. The first nephew arrived riding in a coach. The second nephew came on horseback. But Robert Hunter, the 3rd nephew, showed up on foot. His thrifty aunt was so impressed, she bequeathed to him all of her property, believe it or not.
Okay, I was wrong. Boy, was I wrong. I was so completely wrong. No, that wasn't the last email for the show. That wasn't the last one. I neglected to remember that I wanted to include some of the stuff that I saw on the forums. And one of those items that was written in the forums is a commentary on episode 39. And it comes to us from Sarah of Does My Geek Look Big In This? And she writes,
suddenly had a terrible thought. Have I not brought the podcast Spaceship Radio to the attention of my fellow veranda inhabitants? Quick, better rectify that immediately. Spaceship Radio is a podcast from Andy Doan. Tagline, great vintage sci-fi without the hassle of time travel.
And she includes the link, which of course will be in the Goodikadingadongadongs.
He has mostly old radio shows from the likes of Ray Bradbury, and recently has started adding old movies and comics too. Awesome podcast and site. Anyway, episode Spaceship Radio 51, Hallucination Orbit, ties in very nicely with episode 39 of International Detective Dragons from Outer Space, a tale of a lonely spaceman orbiting Pluto and his hallucinations. Not specifically about robots, but a nice little story about how we humanize things. There's lots of robot shows here, too. For example, in episode 50, The Seventh Order, and episode 45, How To. The latter being one of my favorite shows, aired by Andy, and it's got lots of humor. Highly recommended. I've even burnt a whole bunch of episodes to disc for playing on long road trips, as each episode is complete and they're only 30 minutes long. Sarah.
Thank you very much. You certainly don't have to sell me on anything to do with old-time radio. I've got plenty of it, and I listen to plenty of it. And I did actually go back and check out Hallucination Orbit. Very fine, very entertaining, and very fascinating story. I'd recommend it highly. So, folks, check out in the Goodikadingadongadongs the link to Spaceship Radio. One other item I'm going to include here. One other item that is from the forums. It was a response written to a forum post by Derek. And as a matter of fact, what I read earlier by Derek was also posted in the forums. See, if you join the forums, you get lots of heads up on what's coming next. But at any rate, this response comes to us from Cumulus the Nimblest. I'm going to paraphrase here and read it pretty closely to the way it appears on the forum. So, here we go.
I'll jump on the pile. Does one constitute a pile? Future IDDFOS topic? I vote no to both. In WikiWikiWiki's definition of transhumanism, they, Yeah, who are they, anyway? They list various undesirable and unnecessary aspects of the human condition. Here, of course, begins the counter-argument of tampering with the natural order, or, worse, God's intent. Stupidity? Why is stupidity undesirable? We wouldn't have reality TV, Springer, court TV shows, Scrappy-Doo, the Fonzie Jumps the Shark episode, or golf. Hit a ball as far as you can, then walk to it only to hit it away again. Glorified fetch. More importantly, if stupidity is gone, how do we then gauge who or what is smart? Now, on suffering and even aging, I can buy into it a bit. Both could be unnecessary, certainly undesirable, but taken to the extremes, disease and death in particular, what precious balance gets tipped? Unless we stop adding to the population, preventing people from leaving it creates an obvious mathematical dilemma.
And that from Cumulus the Nimblest. All very true. And so, where do I go next with this? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where to go with this. It is an outrageously broad topic. I think I better stop and consider where I'm going to go with this. I think the best thing for me to say at this point is there's too much to say about this. There's too many different directions this can go in. And it certainly more than qualifies as an IDD-FOS broad topic for the human race, because that's basically what it's dealing with. It's dealing with the entire human race. The difficulty that I think many people have, and that I have as well, is so long as we're talking about using technology and artificial means to improve people, and whether improvement is the correct word or not is yet another topic, so long as we're talking about that, then it's not something that actually can be applied to the human race as a whole. Not right away, anyway. It's certainly possible that it could be something like as broad and widespread as inoculation. That certainly makes it to many parts of the world. Inoculation against diseases is a portable technology that has made it nearly everywhere. So when it becomes that simple, then maybe we can talk about something that affects the entire human race. You know, I swear one day I'll actually reach the end of a sentence knowing what it was I started out to say before I reach the end of the sentence. I'm really particularly bad this episode. It's almost as if I put my jaw on automatic and just leave myself sitting here in the chair talking while I go and get a cup of coffee or something. I don't even know where I was going with that. I suppose it's the general outlook that I have myself that the best, the most beneficial work to be gained out of technology and the cutting-edge bio-research that supposedly is going to improve people, I suppose that best thing is something that is pretty much going to be reserved to a small portion of the population. That may end up being a good thing. I don't know. I really don't know. Because if you try to apply something, to the entire human race, and you're not right the first time, you're really asking for it. We've warned ourselves again and again about this. I think the most recent and highest profile warning I can think of in terms of fiction and television would be the Pax. It's like, do anything that's supposed to change people from what they actually are into what you think they should be, and you're going to end up with a problem. Can I leave Pratchett out of this? No, I don't think so. Yet another quote from Pratchett, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't feel like getting up and going and finding the book, but I think it was from his novel Night Watch, and he comments about the difference between successful and unsuccessful politics or group leadership and management. And he said something on the order of, some people look at people and think to themselves, this is not how they should be behaving. How do we change them? Instead of looking at people and realizing, this is how people are. How do we deal with it? Now, there's snippets of recordings, generally where I put my little humorous chunks, 1 minute, 30 second, 2 minute chunks of old time radio in between things, snippets throughout this particular episode that actually do have to do with the subject, and they're pretty easily identifiable, all of them, except possibly for the 1952 recordings of Man and Superman with Charles Laughton and Charles Boyer. Don Juan in Hell. And it's pretty much to indicate that it's an old idea. I mean, the play Man and Superman was published, written by George Bernard Shaw, published in 1903. So we're hearing snippets about improving the human race, even in 1903. Now, I'm sure many, many examples could be found before that. If you want to go back 400 years, you've got the Elizabethan England attitude in the Shakespearean times. They had their ladder of the worthy and the unworthy in terms of society and people. They had that chain of being set very firmly into place. There were the base and the common people, and there were those with noble blood. I mean, in 1903, here's Shaw talking about the ultimate goal of improving humanity by breeding it. That predated the Nazi bigots with their super race idea that by about 35 years. We get the eugenics wars that resulted in Khan Noonien Singh and his superior band of world conquerors in 1967 from the original classic Star Trek. We get the $6 Million Man from 1974. I've got a snippet in there from Blade Runner that treats on the genetic manipulation of not just life forms, but, well, the ethical question of whether it's possible to own people just because you claim to have created them. But there's plenty, there have to be plenty of other examples out there, both in fiction and in cinema. Oh, there was one other. I didn't get any sound bites from it. The film Gattaca with Uma Thurman, and I can't remember the name of the male protagonist, but the actor, it doesn't matter. The movie deals with taking genetics to the extreme, to the logical conclusion of class separation because of it. So what is it all about, though, this movement of improving people? Improving them to do what? That's another question, and for what reason? I gotta step back here, and I have to apply the lens of the gorilla, because I'm never going to be able to look at any of these big picture questions again without applying the point of view of Quinn's gorilla. And while I've already stated that I don't think that viewpoint has answered quite everything, I do consider it a valid one to use and apply to a situation this broad. And when we're talking about these so-called undesirable aspects of the human animal, are these aspects undesirable because they don't fit civilization, because they don't fit this recent development of only the past 6,000 years, this recent development of working far, far longer hours on a regular basis and being ordered about by other people and suddenly having a hierarchy and a bureaucracy and a civilization that's far more complex than we ever had before? The mechanism of consumption, the mechanism of expansion and growth, because human beings don't fit what that has developed into, they're looked upon, the human animal is looked upon as something flawed, that has to be fixed in order to fit into and survive better in the framework that we've created? I don't know. You can almost step back and say, listen, we ain't broke. Human beings aren't broke, so don't fix us. But I'm not sure. If we do aspire to be better, if we have the long-standing dreams to become the immortal, the superhuman, and we have that as an attainable goal within the next 2 or 3 decades, possibly sooner, do you suppose the technology is going to make people any better at deciding whether they should do it or not? Is it going to be possible? Do you think it's possible that there will be moral, legal, and ethical questions that are left unsolved and unresolved long after the technology itself has outstripped them? If someone has applied for some kind of memory enhancement implant, whatever the internet is going to be in 30 years, suppose there's a chip that actually allows you to virtually go into a VR when you feel like it and retrieve information instantaneously. What do you do if someone on the other side of the world programs a virus that directly accesses that chip and affects that interface with your own brain to drive you permanently mad? Who does your family go after? Do they sue the company? Suppose the service was offered by AOL 2030. I mean, right now, if the internet goes down or a virus gets spread around and does all kinds of damage, it's damaging machinery. It's damaging information. What happens when it starts damaging people? If you've been one of those super soldiers, if you signed on to go overseas and you had enhanced lung capacity or enhanced oxygen take up in your red blood cells, better built-in night vision, tougher skin, a higher likelihood of wounds healing rapidly, better musculature, tougher skeleton, whatever nanotech and genetic engineering can do immediately to improve, and we use air quotes around improve throughout this whole discussion, to improve the human being to become a better soldier. What happens when you come back home and you suddenly start developing all kinds of issues medically because of all these so-called enhancements? I mean, the legal and the moral imbalances have already been demonstrated just with the growth of the computer age, the digital age. It has just proven over the past 10 years that tech is faster than morals. Well, what's going to happen if there's a patented strain of bacteria? Actually, there is. There is a patented strain of bacteria. I'm going to include the link to that in the Kudikatingatongatongs. But what's the next step after that? Patented livestock strains? Maybe that's out there too. I didn't quite research that deep. But will it reach the point of designer labor? Companies that put out a specific product or have known working environments that would require people that are better, say, at working in a dusty situation, or people that can handle hot plastics better than others, people that can work a 12-hour day or work an 18-hour day. Now, certainly the company will say, well, we're more than compensating them financially. Well, that's not the point. Or will it be the point? Will people be fighting for the right to have enhancements that allow them to do dangerous jobs or work longer hours or do such and such, to work under the ocean or wherever because of the financial compensation? I don't know. I don't know what to think about this. I suppose it might have been a hell of a lot more useful to narrow down the topic, to select either one route that the thing could take or the other. Personal, soon-to-be affordable techno enhancements of individuals, and then the other route being the genetic manipulation for so-called improvements of the entire human race. It's tough. I think this is going to have to span 2 episodes. This is definitely going to have to leak over into episode 42. But I am going to narrow the focus. I'm going to make this request that if you would, please write in. Anyone, of course, that's written in for this episode is more than welcome to write in again. Anyone that's considered maybe kind of writing in but just hasn't particularly felt like it or just needs that little extra nudge, please consider this your little extra nudge. Give it a try. You might like it. It costs not a dime. I mean, I've had these super regular people writing in these thought-provoking and well-spoken emails all this time, but it's not fair to make them do all the work all the time. I don't deserve to be that lucky, and they shouldn't be made to work that hard. But at any rate, what is the question? For episode 42, let's call the topic transhumanism continued. But if you would, check out the links, any of the stories that you can find, and focus on one particular aspect of it, carrying it forward to its final conclusion, in your opinion. And it can be as serious as you want it to be, or even comically outrageous. So let's explore this a little bit further in episode 42. I'm going to introduce the old-time radio show now. The old-time radio offering for this episode is The Gunpowder Plot, and it is a Sherlock Holmes mystery. Here's 1 minute from that.
Holmes, I wish you'd tell me what's going on. Why have we taken this cab back to Baker Street?
Get out of these clothes. They've served their purpose. Now there's more serious work afoot.
Well, I'm still confused about our interview with Guy Falconby. Why did you say your name was Tom Nimitz?
What touch of vanity, old fellow?
Vanity? How do you mean?
Well, consider the names in this case so far, Watson. James Stewart says that he's been threatened by Guy Falconby. A name, as Mr. Stewart points out, not unlike Guy Fawkes. Do you recall the names of the three tenants that Mr. Falconby gave us a few minutes ago?
Yes. Winter, Rookwood, and Keynes. But what's that got to do with it?
A great deal, my dear fellow. Thomas Winter, Ambrose Rookwood, and Robert Keynes were the three men executed with Guy Fawkes in the original gunpowder plot in 1605.
Good Lord, where does Tom Nivett, the name you gave yourself, fit into the picture?
Thomas Nivett was the Westminster magistrate who arrested the conspirators. Since there would be murderers such an academic knowledge of the original plot, I thought I'd let him know that he was up against an opponent worthy of his skill.
No, I can't say that that had anything in particular to do with transhumanism, but it's still a fun old-time radio show, and you might enjoy it. It, of course, in its entirety, which I think is about 30 minutes long, will be available for direct download from the IDD FOS homepage as this week's, this episode's genre nugget. I guess I really better wrap it up now because I rambled like crazy in a very unfocused manner, and I apologize for that. I really kind of should have just shut up and let the emails and forum messages speak for themselves, because they've really pretty much asked the questions already. All right, the closing music for episode 41. The name of the piece is Dance of the Clouds. The artist is named Origen, O-R-I-G-E-N. And it comes to us courtesy from music.podshow.com. Last episode 40, I think it was, I referred to them as podsafe.com. That's totally wrong, and it was very sloppy of me to just say that. I do apologize. It's music.podshow.com. Go over there and check out all the fine musical offerings that they have there. So let's give this a listen, and on the opposite side, I'll be saying my goodbyes.
I like that piece of music. Can't precisely explain why, but then again, I don't suppose anybody could really precisely explain why any particular piece of music or kind of music appeals to them. But that's just clean, simple, pleasant thing to listen to, and well composed and well performed. And we have reached the end of episode 41. I would like to thank very much for the contributions to this episode, Mr. T. Congratulations again, Mr. T, on getting into that film school. Excellent. I'd like to thank James, Derek, Mick Bradley, Randy Silverwind, Kurt the Camera Guy, Sarah, and Cumulus the Nimblest. And I'd like to thank you very much for listening. I hope you'll join us again in episode 42. That will be the episode in which I explain why the podcast is called International Detective Dragons from Outer Space. But until then, I hope everything goes very well for you. And until then, best of days.
This is a thought. A thought. A thought. Remember, listen for another adventure of...
International Detective Dragons from Outer Space.